You've reached the Every Little Thing helpline. One for the money, two for the show. Leave your message at the beep, then go. Cat, go.
Hey, EOP. This is Garrett from Baltimore, Maryland. This is kind of a factual emergency. I want to know why people impersonating Elvis are marrying people in Las Vegas.
Hello?
Hey, Garrett, it's Flora from ELT.
Hey, Flora, how you doing?
So, Elvis weddings, love the question.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Are you a big Vegas person?
Not really. I've driven through Vegas, but not a big fan of, like, gambling. And, yeah, I'm also kind of a spiteful gambler. Like, I'll sit there until I win, and that's not a healthy habit when you're in a casino.
I bet they love you in casinos.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, eBay certainly loves me, because I definitely did that the other night with a La Crusette pot. It was my third pick, but I lost the first two bids, so I was like, nope, damn it, I'm getting this one.
So you're saying casinos are not safe for you?
No.
So why the suspicious mind about Elvis weddings?
I don't know. It's kind of always just been in my zeitgeist, I guess. And I did try and do my own research. And I was listening to one of your episodes one day. And I was just like, I'm going to call him up. Why is this a thing? Like, what's going on?
What did you uncover in your research?
Couldn't really come up with anything. You know, I hit the internet wall pretty hard. Because everything that kept coming up was like just things about his first wife. Or she was like super young and stuff like that.
Priscilla.
Yeah, Priscilla, yeah.
Yeah, Elvis met Priscilla when she was 14.
Yeah.
And then there's this like whole story about how they were quote unquote just friends and there were chaperones and stuff.
Yeah, you can't really like not speculate with that sort of situation.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, I've been a musician for a long time and, you know, looked up to these bands. But you look at what the skeletons they have in their closet. It's like lost a lot of respect for them over the years. But I do like Elvis's music. I've played a bunch of his tunes, and it really did change the game when it came to like what you could do on stage and how the energy flows in a performance.
All right, so what do you want to know about Elvis weddings?
So I want to know, like, why were they doing this? Elvis impersonators marrying people on the side. And where did it come from? Who was the first person to do it? Instead of like going to the courthouse, you go to the Elvis.
Yeah, I feel like I take for granted that you can go to Las Vegas and get married by a celebrity who died more than 40 years ago. But that's fucking weird.
Yeah, it is fucking weird. Yeah. I'm glad you guys are as like perplexed as I am about this.
Okay, well, I think we found just the Vegas fanatic to lend a hand. Larry Gregg is a history professor in Missouri.
Hi, Garrett. How are you?
Hi, Larry. Doing good.
And he has got a hunk of burning love for Vegas.
I've been to Las Vegas 75 times.
I mean, you can't get more legit than that.
Larry first visited Vegas as a tourist in the 90s, and he was raked in.
Being on the Strip in Las Vegas, it represented everything that I'm not. I'm a, you know, middle-class person who lives in a nice, small community in the central part of the United States, and then this Las Vegas Strip. Everything is noise and lights, and the streets are packed. I was intrigued by how it reflected none of me.
Larry also saw a glittering opportunity to do research. He says the city has largely been overlooked by historians, so Larry became a regular at the Las Vegas Library, a real reference desk fly.
The wonderful staff at the Special Collections Library at UNLV put a plaque on the table I use when I do research there, so it's my name is on a table because I go there so often.
You're your own kind of high roller.
That's right.
When you're tight with the library, you know you're in with the right people. I like that.
So you wanted to know how Elvis impersonators and Las Vegas weddings got hitched.
Yeah.
Let's start with the holy matrimony part. How did the city of bedding and bling become the city of weddings and rings? The story starts in the 1930s. Back then, Nevada was a dusty non-destination, known mostly for its silver mines. But mining and the money it brought in was starting to dry up. So Larry says the legislature placed a bet on another industry.
What they decide they have to do is work on the tourism business.
And to do that, the state passed a few laws. One made Nevada the only state with legal gambling. Not safe for you, Garrett. Another made it easy for people to untie the knot.
So if you want to get out of a bad marriage as quickly as you can, the thing to do is move to Reno or Las Vegas for 6 weeks to get an end to your marriage.
If you lived there for 6 weeks, you could get divorced. Mm. Other states made you wait years or didn't allow divorce at all. So people were willing to move to Nevada for 6 weeks just to get unhitched. And while they waited, they spent money.
One wonderful historian calculated how much would an average person spend on legal fees and living and eating and having a little bit of relaxation. And the average was about $1,500, which is a lot of money in the 1930s.
It's over $30,000 today.
They're spending that much money in 6 weeks?
Yeah.
Jeez.
The state didn't just make it easy to say, I don't. They also passed laws making it easy to say a big slurred, sure, I guess, I do.
So you could instantly get married. You didn't have to wait, and there was no medical test.
The Las Vegas County Clerk's Office was always open for business. You could get a marriage license 365 days a year.
They were probably making money off that, too. The state was.
That was the whole name of the game.
Yeah, it's Vegas, baby.
And the hospitality industry got in on it, too. They made it hassle-free to walk down the aisle.
They would place ads in largely Southern California newspapers saying, if you come stay with us, let's say the El Rancho Vegas, which opened in 1941, they would put together a package for you, the airfare, all the meals, the wedding license, a tour of Lake Mead, and it's for a very low cost.
Well, like, yeah, stay here, have a tour, do this.
It appealed to a lot of people that this would be fun, you know, that this is breaking tradition, we're just going to fly into Las Vegas, and then you bring all the pictures home, and people are excited for you that you took this intriguing step to get married in Las Vegas.
And the number of weddings skyrocketed. Las Vegas went from 1,000 weddings in 1931 to more than 20,000 10 years later.
Wow.
It just becomes the place to get married.
And it still is. Last year, the county gave out 77,000 marriage licenses.
Oh, in 2021? Jesus Christ.
I know. So that's how Vegas found its nuptial niche. But what about Elvis? How did this devil in disguise get knotted in with weddings? This leg of the story has more twists and turns than a hopped-up Elvis trying to put on his rhinestone jumpsuit.
Well, it starts with his first appearance, which was unfortunate for him. Elvis was 21 years old, 1956.
And he had just become a huge star. Heartbreak Hotel was all over the radio. Elvis was all over TV. Teens across the country were swooning. But his manager wanted to get him in front of more adult audiences. And since Vegas had the hottest nightclubs, that's where he went.
A fine young lad and a fine talent. Let's welcome, ladies and gentlemen, Elvis Presley.
Elvis got a gig performing at the famous resort and casino, the New Frontier. He was on the bill with huge acts, like a classic Vegas big band, a famous comedian.
And Elvis is billed as the added attraction. And when he arrives in Las Vegas to perform, what he sees in front of the New Frontier Hotel is a 24-foot cardboard cut-up photo of him. And because of the atomic testing nearby, they also promoted him as the atomic-powered singer. So they tried to give him as much ballyhoo as they could.
Ballyhoo. What is ballyhoo?
Hubbub.
Hubbub? Oh, just like zhuzhing him up?
Yeah, zhuzhing him up. That's right.
Okay, word, yeah.
So picture this. It was the night of Elvis's performance. The audience awaited him in the resort's Venus Room.
And these are people who look like me, middle-aged and older. Gentlemen with jackets and ties, and women in very beautiful dresses. It's the traditional Las Vegas audience of the 1950s. Everyone dressed up.
And that audience was used to crooners and easy listening.
Performers like Frank Sinatra and Nat King Cole and Lena Horne.
Yeah, it's like slow big band music, yeah.
Can you guess where this is going?
They probably didn't like it too much.
You got that right.
They say it's way too loud, and they concluded he was just vulgar. There was one fellow, one of the first performances, who was sitting in the front, stood up and said in a loud voice, "I've had enough of this, I'm leaving."
These people just didn't know how to dance to it yet. That's the thing.
The crowds were like, "Return to sender. We do not love you, tender. Check into the Heartbreak Hotel, because only fools would rush in to see you perform."
Sometimes you bomb that hard, it happens. I've been there. I know what it's like. When you start playing, like, the whole room just empties.
Newsweek said Elvis's performance was like a jug of corn liquor at a champagne party.
They really could roast people back in the day.
So Elvis leaves the building with his head hung low, and he turns his attention to acting. But Bossa Nova Baby still likes Sin City.
The intriguing part is he really likes Las Vegas, and it will become the place he likes to travel to when he needs a break in his movie making or concert schedule.
But he doesn't set a blue suede shoe on a Vegas stage for years.
Oh, man.
Well, he won't perform there again until the making of Viva Las Vegas. That movie was shot in Las Vegas in 1963.
Okay. I've heard of this movie. Yeah.
It's probably the best of his movies. It's certainly the most popular of his movies.
In the final scene, he marries a character played by an A-list actress, Anne Margaret, and the title song became an anthem for the city.
Viva Las Vegas. Kind of like a straight shuffle kind of beat. That's what kind of it is. Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las Vegas. Viva Las
Vegas. How Elvis had made ground as a Vegas icon with this movie, but he hadn't unlocked mascot status yet. That happened in his last act.
It was 1969. He was 34 years old, and he wanted to get back to doing live shows.
So his manager, Colonel Parker, sees this as a golden opportunity to go back on the road. And the best place to go on the road is Las Vegas. So that leads to the contract at the new International Hotel.
And this was the birth of Rhinestone Jumpsuit Elvis. He's a little older, a lot sideburnier.
I can see it, yeah.
He's belting out his classic hits, and unlike his last Vegas performance, this time the crowd can't help falling in love.
It could not have gone any better.
Hell yeah.
It's a really large venue, over 30 pieces in the orchestra. He's got two backup singing groups, and he sings his hits, and every night's a sellout.
His contract there was renewed again and again and again and again.
Yeah, it just took about like 13 years for everybody to understand what he was doing.
And he will sell out that room every time he performs for 7 years. 600 performances. I believe he performed for a little over 2 million people in those 7 years. He is the premier performer in Las Vegas.
Good for him. That sounds dope as hell. Playing to that many people, having a contract, that just sounds like wonderful, you know? There's sold out shows for the next 7 years. Yeah. I don't know where it's going, but I can see all the pieces there now.
Elvis had become Las Vegas royalty.
In spite of problems in his personal life, marriage problems, reported drug use, his star power stayed strong.
In fact, the city's appetite for Elvis was so big that audiences would even settle for knockoffs. The impersonations began even before the king was dead. And then when he died in 1977, his image blew up even more. There was Elvis bubblegum, Elvis busts, bedspreads, board games, a life-size statue that sweat like Elvis.
It's like, slap that face on everything and sell it.
And imitators flocked to the scene.
Were they still just doing impersonations at this time? No one had like opened up a chapel yet?
Yeah. So how did Elvis find his way into the chapel?
How you doing? Elvis Presley coming to you live from Las Vegas, baby.
More from Las Vegas, baby, after the break. So Las Vegas loves Elvis and Las Vegas loves weddings, but how did the two say I do?
Mm-hmm.
Our producer, Hadley Robinson, blistered her fingers and strained her loving arms, dialing dozens of historians, chapel owners, tourism officials.
Jesus.
Hi, this is Greg.
Hi, Greg. It's Hadley again.
She also conscripted the Nevada State Museum to help. She put the county clerk to work.
Oh, wow.
She got local journalists chasing down the first ersatz Elvis wedding.
And I'm trying to figure out when people started doing Elvis-themed weddings.
I don't know that there is a moment, you know, the aha moment.
So the precise date, I can't give you.
I don't know who the first one was.
I don't have it documented to like the first sighting of an Elvis wedding.
I think it's a combination of things. After Elvis died, there were acts who were doing all right as Elvis impersonators. And they're wearing the rhinestones and they've got the big sunglasses and the big sideburns.
You know, you put on a wig and put on the jumpsuit and the cape or whatever, and you're Elvis.
Everybody was Elvis. Everybody did their imitation of Elvis.
And then somebody got the idea to do an Elvis wedding chapel.
You know, it was kind of like a joke at first, you know, get married by Elvis. It just caught on and it just mushroomed.
This was like a perfect storm.
It's sort of like a flow chart where eventually at the bottom, boom, they meet.
Send me a copy of the article.
Good luck with it.
Well, give me a call back if you figure it out so I can put that in the official record.
God damn, you guys really hit the pavement with this.
Basically, people in the wedding biz say that Elvis weddings were inevitable. By the 1980s, the wedding capital of the world was pelvis deep in Elvises. Of course, Elvis impersonators would show up at quickie wedding chapels.
It makes total sense. It really was a perfect storm. The guys really couldn't have put it in a better way. Like, all the right things were there.
Yeah. And pretty soon, it was a phenomenon. A gaggle of Elvis impersonators showed up in a Golden Girls wedding scene in 1988.
Uh-oh. Either I mixed the Elvis list with the wedding list, or everyone in Max's family appeared on the Ed Sullivan Show.
It's like, yeah, it's a cultural icon at this point. It's a movement.
So that's how Elvis and weddings became forever tied in holy matrimony. And I don't think Elvis weddings are going to leave a Las Vegas anytime soon.
I hope not.
The manager at one Vegas quickie wedding spot, Graceland Chapel, said 75% of the 7,000 ceremonies they do every year are Elvis themed.
It's like, yeah, keep it rolling. Blackjack and poker and the roulette wheel. A fortune won and lost on every deal. All you need is a strong heart and a nerve of steel. I can totally see how people's fandom going that far to just becoming its own niche wedding industry. Las Vegas with your neon flashing and your one-armed bandits crashing. All those hopes down the drain.
Las Vegas turning day into nighttime, turning night into daytime. If you see it once, you'll never be the same again. So, Garrett, since you haven't spent that much time in Vegas, we wanted to bring a little Vegas to you.
Oh, man.
We wanted you to experience an Elvis wedding firsthand. So, Garrett, I know that we have only just met, but will you?
What are you saying here, Flora?
No, that's a joke. I'd never marry a musician.
I mean, yeah, even if you divorced us, you'd get nothing out of it.
That casserole dish would be mine. That's for sure.
That's where my equity is. It's where it is right now.
Okay, so is there anyone or anything that you are ready to commit to?
I put some thought into it. My cat, Swigs. She's a gray cat that has the socks, like the white paws. Yeah, she's very cute.
When did you two meet?
When I first moved to Baltimore City, about 6 years ago, she was an alley cat. And we had an herb garden. She would hang around and just eat leaves off the catnip plant. And I'm like, that's the drunk cat right there. So that's how she got her name.
I'm glad you guys found each other.
I am too. Yeah, she's got me through, the pandemic. It was nice having a little fur ball floating around.
Well, we can help you two today become man and cat.
That would be lovely. Man, cat, excellent.
Because waiting in our Boom Boom Zoom room is a very special guest.
How you doing? Elvis Presley coming to you live from Las Vegas, baby. I'm alive and kicking. and rocking in Vegas, baby.
Oh, it's a pleasure, Mr. Elvis.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. I'm excited to talk to you guys.
Thank you for being with us. Ladies and gentlemen, Elvis is in the building.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I'm feeling good. I've been working out. What can I do for y'all?
Would you be willing to join Garrett and his cat Swigs in a holy ceremony?
Are you kidding me? This is what I live for. I live for this. Here's the thing. One day you literally met the love of your life and it changed your life forever. And even though you didn't run off to the chapel and get married with Swigs right then, here we are several years later with the love of your life, happy, and you went through the roller coaster ride that we just call life. Come on, pandemic, everything else that y'all went through.
Mm-hmm.
And you're closer than you've ever been. So, here we go. Garrett and Swigs, I want you to think back to the very, very, very first moment where you ever laid eyes on each other. And just think for a moment, Garrett, how many millions of people, animals, that we meet in this lifetime, people come and go every day.
Absolutely.
And every now and then, you just connect with another spirit, whether it's a person or an animal. In your case, that beautiful cat. So I want you to look into each other's eyes. And I want you to speak these words to Swig after me. To have and to hold.
To have and to hold.
From this day forward.
From this day forward.
In love and understanding.
In love and understanding.
I pledge you my faith.
I pledge you my faith.
Swigs, you are amazing. Keep going. That's for you. Swigs, you're amazing. Garrett, are you with me?
Sure.
Say those words.
Oh, Swigs, you're amazing. Okay. Swigs, you're amazing.
You're beautiful.
You're beautiful.
You're powerful.
You're powerful.
You're my best friend.
You're my best friend.
And you are the love of my life.
And you are the love of my life.
Let's do this.
Let's do this.
That's right. So before I can pronounce you happily married for the rest of your lives, I got a serious question I got to ask you. Think about this a minute before you answer. Don't just blurt out the first thing that pops in your head, Garrett. Are you ready?
Mm-hmm.
All right. Here we go. Garrett and Swigs, do you promise to adopt each other's hound dogs? Never wear your blue suede shoes in the rain. Always be each other's teddy bears. And always, always give each other, especially you, Swigs, a hunka burning love. Garrett, do you promise?
I promise.
Swigs, I'm just going to take that as a yes. So, by the power vested in me, the King, it is my privilege to meet you today on this beautiful podcast and pronounce you finally husband and cat. You may give her a big, big, big hug and never stop.
Yeah, I will. Thank you.
Are you feeling it?
I'm feeling it, man. Hell yeah.
I have tears in my eyes.
It's a beautiful moment.
Beautiful.
Beautiful. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Elvis is leaving the building. But I'm really still here.
If you have a hunka burning question, please give us a ring, 833-RING-ELT. You have tried to find an answer and you cannot find one. We'll connect you with the expert you need.
What? How did you get into this gig?
It's a great story. So when I was in high school,
Oh, nice.
A very special thanks to Elvis, aka Roland August. If you are looking for an officiant for upcoming nuptials to a beloved pet or even a human being, Roland is available. Check him out at themobileminister.com.
This episode was produced by Jahi Whitehead, Hadley Robinson, Stephanie Werner, Phoebe Flanagan, Annette Heist, and Flora Lichtman, with help from Doug Barron. Our fact-checker is Nicole Pasulka. Our editors are Jorge Just and Caitlin Kenny. Music by Dara Hirsch, Bobby Lord, Emma Munger, Billy Libby, and So Wiley. Mixed by Dara Hirsch. Every Little Thing is a Gimlet production and a Spotify original podcast. Congratulations, Garrett and Swigs. Goodbye. I ain't nothing but a hound dog.